Welcome. Thank you for coming along to this last presentation of the day. I'm in the room that's been doing with most of the Apple talks today, and as you've probably noticed, I'm going to do this in the style of Microsoft, hence the well-dressed talk you're going to get. My name's Carl Marshall. I'm the Steeper Project Manager. I'm leading the podcasting project at the University of Oxford. We're going to give you a quick talk on to what the Steeper Project is, and we're going to cover things like what is podcasting, start from the beginnings here. I'll show you some examples from the university itself. The key thing we're going to understand is about workflows and processes. This is how we actually try and make this work on an institutional level. And this will lead into sort of what the Steeple Project is. To bring it back to sort of more awareness for yourselves, we're going to talk about the OUSES podcasting service and how this sort of work applies to the university. We've got some information about where to get more information later, and a portion of this session is about taking your questions. So roughly speaking, I'll talk for about 25 minutes and then we've got time to deal with questions at the end. So, let's start from the very beginning. What is podcasting? Well, podcasting is the idea of taking some form of multimedia content. This is some form of digital file, be it an audio file, a video file, even a PDF. Putting it online and making it available via some form of syndication or subscription service. Combine those two elements and you have what we call podcasting. Now, the terminology and the techniques for actually dealing with this are the same regardless of what happens. So, the idea of taking any form of multimedia content and putting it online often applies, but the key thing I want to emphasize here with the podcasting is the idea of subscription and syndication. The power behind this is that anytime you create new content and you add it to a podcasting feed, that content is automatically downloaded to anybody who's subscribed to this, has shown an interest. You don't have to do any extra effort, there's no advertising involved. You create new content, it automatically goes out to the people who are interested in it. So, podcasting itself, though, can really be sort of emphasized by three key words. The idea that is whatever. Podcasts now you'll find on almost any given topic you can imagine. They've got sort of a range and power and depth now that's sort of quite sort of unusual and quite sort of provocative. The fact, though, that you can download this content means you can take it wherever you are. You don't have to listen to it in any particular one location. Portable media players such as iPods, Zooms, any number of other devices you can take with you, laptops, and play this content. And because you can take it with you and do what you want, it also means you can play it whenever you want it to. This material can be consumed at your time, your inclination, when you want, how you want, where you want. That means, for example, you can quite easily be listening to educational material whilst working out in the gym, or quite easily listening to music whilst riding on the bus. All this stuff works together quite nicely and makes this a very compelling medium to work with. Now, we've been doing podcasting in Oxford for a little while now, and the little graph that's come up on screen now shows you some of the kind of sort of results we're getting from this in terms of amount of popularity and usage. The red line is the one that catches most people's attention. This shows the cumulative downloads of Oxford podcast content in effectively the last 44 weeks or so. And you'll notice that line has exceeded 1 million downloads. Now, that is not to sort of be a small achievement. That is actually a million items of Oxford content have made it out into the wider world. The line at the run across the bottom, sort of purpley-grey line, tells you about the actual sort of number of downloads on a week-by-week basis. So you can kind of see some interesting little peaks, such as towards the very left when you actually had the launch time, so everything's new, everything's fresh. And then you get some little interesting marketing sort of related peaks and rises as you move along. But gradually the trend we're finding with the content is, as we're producing more and more, the amount of downloads we're getting going up and up, and the audience is getting wider and wider. But the key thing to emphasize here is actually the graph that's bouncing around the most, and that's the blue line waving up and down, heading towards, well, if it's working from the scale on the left-hand side, actually says about 280,000. And that is the number of subscribers. That's the number of people and machines that are coming back and checking for new content on a sort of weekly, regular basis. Now, as you can probably imagine, that means 280,000 is more than the sort of population of the university. So that means this is very much a wide activity. It's going out to a much larger audience than you're working with normally. So we need a few little key phrases to be able to describe what we're talking about here. Start with this phrase, podcast. Well, what a podcast is, essentially, is some form of digital file. So that'll be referred to as a recording or some sort of media item, could be a video. Literally, at the end of the day, though, it is just a computer file. When you collect these things together, you need some way of containing them or some way of actually associating them. And that's the idea of a podcasting feed. It's some file container that you put all your related kind of outputs and recordings into. And again, that tends to be referred to in different ways, such as albums, collections, containers. But ultimately, it's very much like having a folder on your computer of organized content. Things you're familiar with are all related to each other. And when this is going out into the wider world, we also have to try and provide some form of visual icon to sort of identify this content readily with, especially when it appears in a much wider context. So we tend to refer to this as some form of album art. So that's the basic background and theory. Let's give you some examples of content from the University of Oxford. The first one I'm going to start with is what we class as sort of our high-end, high-quality, high-production value content. This is a series of video recordings done by Dr. Simon Benjamin in the engineering department, materials department, and he's done a bespoke series on a project he's working on quantum nanotechnology. And I'll give you a quick play of the video.
We'll be taking a look at the question, what kind of material would you need to use in order to build perhaps the most exotic technology ever conceived of, namely a quantum computer? In the first podcast, we'll see that the material you might use is something quite ordinary, namely carbon, but in an extremely strange and unfamiliar form.
Now, in some ways, I've been a little bit cruel to him in terms of how brief the editing is there. But what we've actually got in this case is a presenter who's gone off and written some very sort of specific content about his material with an audience, with the audience in mind and the format in mind. He's got himself a film crew, so he actually records himself actually giving a presentation about certain models and materials he's got ready. And to actually illustrate some of these concepts further, he's actually gone and got a graphics animation team to try and put together animations. So, for example, Caging Schrodinger's Cat happens to have some nice animations showing the Schrodinger's Cat experiment. So it's a very cute cat that looks like it's either dead and alive at the same time. However, the majority of the content we tend to work with is of a much simpler variety, really, and that is when you're working with audio only. Now, 70% of the content coming out of the university at the moment tends to be audio-only content, and the power of audio is it tends to be easy to produce and much more flexible in its consumption. Audio you at least can tend to listen to in the background whilst doing other tasks, for example. So, quick example we've got now.
What? Way gardena in your dagen failed kuninger thrimje frunon, who the arvelingus ellen remedon. Now you may think I've gone doolally. It's the first week and the pressure has got to me. What on earth am I saying? Well, what I was saying was that, and that may even worry you even more. You may think, what in God's name am I doing in a German lesson? I've come to study English. For those of you who don't recognise it, those are the first three lines of a poem which you will come to know and love called Beowulf, and it follows roughly about 3,000 odd lines of alliterative verse, loosely after that.
Some of you will probably recognise that voice as being Dr. Stuart Lee, director of OUCS. And again, what we've got here is an example of his regular lecture series. He's a teacher in sort of the English faculty, and he does a sort of regular series on medieval English. What he's done here is a very sort of simple thing. As he gives his regular lecture, he's actually got a digital audio recorder. He's stuck it on the desk as he's talking. He's hit record at the beginning, he's hit stop at the end, and lo and behold, he's managed to capture the majority of what he's talking about. And as you've probably picked up even from that short sample, it's actually still very easy to understand most of what's going on in that environment without even necessarily seeing what he's talking about. So much as you didn't see the words on the blackboard he's referring to, you can still follow along because he does a very good sort of talking presentation. Now, somewhere in between these sort of two examples is the idea that you can take presentations, be they lectures, specific talks, or any number of other different type things, and you can have what is actually a video recording, but it's a recording of what goes on to, say, a screen. So we tend to call these a screencast. And the idea is you capture the screen content and you capture the audio, and you get a slightly more compelling and sort of more sort of stimulating response because of the fact you've got that extra level of visual involvement. So, a quick example from Andreas Busch.
Indeed, Germany was split into four occupation zones, each of which was administered by one of the Allied powers. The eastern zone by the Soviet Union, most of the north by the British, most of the south by the Americans, and the zone in the southwest bordering on France by the French.
Now, as you kind of gathered there, that was very simple. It was one of Andreas Busch's regular lecture series on German politics. What he's done here is, again, it was a very simple sort of low effort recording session where he gave his regular lecture series as normal. He had his presentations ready as normal. But what he had done is he'd gotten a simple bit of software on the laptop he was presenting from that allowed him to capture the slides and content that was going out to the screen and projecting what everyone else was seeing, and actually picked up the microphone input from his laptop. So there wasn't really even any extra equipment involved here. It was a bit of software on the equipment he was already using. And again, it's a very simple thing. So you've got now some material that you can, again, reuse later. Now, the last example here, just to sort of show that it's not necessarily all about academic and education here, because the podcasting activities within the university are covering the whole range of university output and activities. The last one I'll show you is from the Ruskin Art School.
My name is Konstanty Jerzy Maria Czartoryski, and this is how I describe my art. Thank you.
Now, I'm no art critic, so I'm going to skip past that very quickly. But what we've actually achieved here is an interview was done with the artist to actually describe their work and talk about it. Very short interview in this example. And they've taken some photographs of the kind of production they did. Quick bit of editing to put these together, and you've created what is a video podcast, but with a very simple sort of low effort amount of somebody asked questions, somebody recorded an interview, and a little bit of editing work later, and you have an output that highlights and showcases the work. And actually for the majority of the final year students who have actually done the Ruskin Art degree, they've actually all gone out and done these sort of interviews. So one thing I'll actually highlight from the end of this one is you'll notice it actually ended with a little bit of branding material. Something we're trying to work on from an institutional perspective is how does our material stand out in the rest of the world. As I said earlier, this content is downloadable. It can be taken wherever and used wherever. So some people don't even necessarily even remember where they downloaded this content from to start with. So you do need to leave some sort of cues and information in the material you send out there to actually point people back to your own sort of information and source. So there are many different things you can consider podcasting. And I've just thrown up a kind of random list of items to think about on the screen at the moment. Conferences are probably one of the easiest, and if you want low-hanging fruits you can work with, you get some very, very engaging, high-profile, very well-presented and academically very good material that goes through Oxford on almost a daily basis. And a conference environment is a pretty good one for actually trying to record and capture information in. It's already a presentation environment. It's already usually in rooms equipped sort of actually to convey sound and vision across to people. Recording it tends to be fairly easy, and then you've got some very good content that you can actually use to either for the delegates to review again that they may have missed later, or to actually expose to a much wider audience. The idea of interviews and peer-to-peer sort of conversations allows you to actually get rich academic information out of people with actually an awful lot of effort having to be involved. When you've got things like equipment training or the need to actually produce extra teaching materials, podcasting or at least digital sort of multimedia creation can actually help do that on a very easy, relatively easy basis. Lectures are actually thrown at the bottom simply because of the fact that not all lectures are necessarily worth capturing and sharing with a wide audience, but generally all lectures are worth capturing and being made available for reuse for the students within that audience. As often you'll find there will be students whose English is not their first language, they may need to sort of review and catch what was said previously the first time around. Or they're actually just for revision purposes. But one thing I will actually point out now is all the evidence so far shows that people are doing this kind of lecture recording on a regular basis. The first thing the academic says, my goodness, people aren't going to bother turning up for my lectures again. Well, the result is actually there's no difference. The people who turn up for lectures still turn up for lectures because it's about the experience. But what we find now is they actually get a different and if not more out of the lecture. They're spending more time now listening and engaging with what's going on in the room there and then than having to actually process the idea and just sort of write it down as fast as they can on a bit of paper. What they can do is engage, and then they can go back and they know that they'll be able to sort of have some notes and they can actually work with that more and more. So, we've talked about sort of what some of the podcasting is. Let's actually talk about how it's actually physically made. There is a process to actually doing podcasting, so we've broken this down into basically three steps. The first step is you actually have to capture some content. That means going out and typically either sort of sticking a video recorder on somebody if need be, sticking an audio recorder by them, using the equipment such as they've already got a laptop, the inbuilt microphones are often good enough to be able to work with this. But you need to actually capture whatever it is you're working with and to create it into some form of digital file. Once you've got that digital file, it tends to be a very large type of file, and it's typically very rough around the edges. So processing needs to be done on that file. That processing typically tends to be about two aspects. You may want to do some editing with that content. You may wish to sort of crop a bit to the beginning and the end where you've got sort of a lot of pausing before things started off, or you may have got some of the extra applause and waffling going on at the end before somebody remembered to press the stop button. There may be bits in the middle if you want to do a little bit more effort to actually edit through. We found, for example, when people are doing audio interviews, they may want to actually go and rearrange some of the order of the questions they were done in. These are things that can be done, but it all comes down to how much time and effort you want to put into this. But ultimately, the second part of the processing that's probably more key here is you actually have to take what is typically a very large digital file and find a way of compressing it down into a much smaller, much more distributable format. And that means actually taking that content and actually putting it through some form of encoding process. Once you've actually got that small digital file that you can actually make available, you then need to publish that content. That means putting that file up onto a publicly accessible file server or a web server and actually putting information about that file into an RSS server to support the syndication subscription system. Within sort of the Oxford environment, we have sort of hosting available for this, but the RSS service we talk about is actually referred to as OxItems. So once you've actually got those three elements, you've captured it, you've processed it, you've published it, if you're doing this with an institutional context, there is actually a little bit more involved to this. You actually do have to consider some of the legal steps and processes that are necessary for the institutional perspective. We've got requirements to actually sort of say that anything we sort of want to publish out onto institutional portals meets certain levels of acceptability. Has it sort of free of copyright? Has somebody actually given permission that we can actually use this material and make it more available? So, for example, there'll be steps involved at the capturing to get permission from the speakers to say we can actually publish this material to a wider audience. When you're processing, we ask, for example, departments and colleges to take responsibility for their content, and that means typically they've got to sign a bit of paperwork to say they agree to this. And when it's actually being published and actually goes out to the world, OUCS take a little bit of responsibility in this and say, right, we've actually checked that we've actually seen the paperwork, so due process has been done here, and that we can actually physically download the file. Simple little checks like that. But it is essential to work within the institutional process. So, just to give you a quick overview, and I don't expect you to be able to read this sort of table, this is a very relatively basic flow diagram, actually, showing the kind of steps involved in podcasting from an institutional perspective, right the way from somebody thinking about creating something, to getting equipment, to editing and recording, to processing it, to publishing it within the RSS system, to actually having it checked off, to having the legal processes dealt with, having somebody review what they recorded, and then it actually being put out and published. And towards the end there, for example, it also mentions what happens if you need to take this material down again later, be it because of an objection from an outside audience, or from something else you decided you want to dispose with later. But there's also a bit of reporting back in there. One of the task examples has view statistics. Get some feedback on what it is you've actually produced and see what kind of audience are listening to it, where has it gone, what kind of popularity is it gaining, and then you can try and understand why and tailor your content accordingly. So, this activity is not necessarily unique, and what we've found is whilst Oxford's been relatively quick in developing a lot of these processes and was one of the first people to at least sort of hit within some of the major UK portals such as iTunes U, we're not alone in trying to do this. And the same kind of process and steps we talk about here can apply to pretty much all institutions. So consequently, we realised it was worthwhile turning sort of what our knowledge and work and working with others to create a project that would allow us to help other institutions. So here we introduce Steeple. Steeple is a project that is nationally funded by the JISC. It means that basically everything we do is trying to be applied to a much wider audience. Now, Steeple is actually a collaborative project with the University of Cambridge, the University of Oxford and the Open University working together through Oxford's lead to actually create as much information, knowledge and documentation to actually help other people and other institutions get into this kind of process. And we're building up a very large community. I've just thrown four examples onto screen at the moment of people who are actually wanting to sort of work with us, to actually learn with us and actually give feedback and learning to actually build upon this. So there's a very active community developing within the UK to actually support the activities and work we're doing. But as all sort of you'd expect, we're documenting as much of this possible on the website, so you'll find the website at http://steeple.ocs.ox.ac.uk. Again, we try to practice what we preach, so conversations and presentations like this one we record and we make available online. We're also documenting and writing up as much of the other stuff as we can do as we go along. The majority of the documentation at the moment taking part within our wiki, which is at a slightly different address. Links are available on the other page, but www.steeple.org.uk will take you to the wiki where the majority of documenting activity is happening. We're not alone in the kind of work we're doing. The UK as a whole is lagging somewhere about 2 years behind European institutions in this kind of sort of multimedia production activity, and about 3 to 4 years behind the US. This does tend to be highlighted when we get international students coming in and they've been familiar or have expectations about what kind of facilities and services are available, and they're finding them occasionally a little bit lacking when they sort of hit the UK higher education market. But there is an international project of which we're involved and part of called Opencast, and they're looking at podcasting and podcasting-related activities within the higher education market. Now, the key thing we're trying to emphasise pretty much through project and everything we're doing is the idea of actually working with standards and common structures and information to actually make this content more usable. So the first things we're talking about typically when it comes to publishing this content is about how we actually get this material out there. And at the moment there are kind of, as it were, two standards that are sort of evolving around this one. I mentioned RSS earlier, which is really simple syndication, though in reality it's actually anything but if you're trying to do it technically. This is very good for taking ideas of taking single recordings and creating some sort of linkage between them and actually getting that material out to people. But what we find, for example, is you may have a piece of content that you've created and you've had to record in maybe 4 or 5 different formats. There may be an audio-only version, there may be a version suitable for the majority of players, there may be something suitable for Windows-only platform. Any number of different formats you may have created. The result is you've got that one piece of content duplicated 5 times. Within the RSS framework, that means you have to duplicate and create 5 separate links and feeds and collections for this kind of stuff, which is not necessarily very helpful when it comes to a wider audience. So what we find is that things like Atom is an emerging and evolving standard that allows us to at least do the same kind of subscription and syndication work RSS provides, but it actually does a much better job of collating data together into one sort of location or one feed. And that feed will support an awful lot more data information. The other problem we've got is the fact that there's not really very well-defined standards for metadata within either of these two systems. So part of the project work is in trying to try to specify what kind of data we expect to find in these kind of XML structures. That's the metadata. The actual content itself and the formats you present it in is a rather large topic and debate in itself. I'll just highlight, for example, video content. Video content the most sort of predominant sort of format to work with at the moment is the MPEG-4 standard, the Part 10, and that's the H.264 codec for doing audio-video encoding. It's a very efficient, very powerful format for compressing video down, typically to about a tenth of its original size, without really a significant loss of quality. However, it is, to some degree, it's a licensed technology. There are patent issues involved in this. Not necessarily everybody is happy with trying to use or create content that may have its licensing conditions changed at a later date. So the other one on there, the Four Fishes, happens to represent the OGG Vorbis format, which is an open source video encoding format. They are trying to provide sort of a competitive alternative that has no patent issues and comparable results to the more sort of developed H.264 format. The problem we've got is the mainstream format is the H.264. It's supported in a much wider range of devices and has better hardware support than the OGG Vorbis does. So consequently, to actually get to a wider audience, you're trying to provide formats that can be used by that audience as much as possible. And this tends to lead into interesting problems. So we move on to, for example, publishing onto the web. Web standards are evolving. We've now got things like HTML5 being created. HTML5 includes a wrapper called the video tag. That video tag specifies, or would like to specify, that any time you sort of use a video tag, the format and data within that video tag will be of a particular format and will be supported by any browser that supports HTML5. Now, if that was the case, life with a common video format, i.e. this common video tag, absolutely fantastic. It means that people would be able to standardise around one particular format, and that would make life, in terms of how much data you got to encode, how much times you got to produce it, much, much easier to work with. Unfortunately, there are philosophical and sort of practical difficulties as to why people aren't necessarily standardising around this. And so what we've got is actually more the sort of current standard at the moment, this fragmented market of all these different formats, no particular common support. And the problems are that it means sort of institutions creating this content have got to try and find different ways to support a much wider range of possible options with varying different results of effectiveness. So we want to try and find ways to actually enforce and encourage the use of standard technologies, standard formats, standard metadata. And the advantage of using standards are means you can build upon this kind of stuff on a much easier basis. So, for example, I've just pulled on sort of the screen at the moment an example of an aggregation system we've been trying to develop and actually a concept we're highlighting. And what it means is because people are using common metadata standards and common formats, we can quite easily build systems or even take systems off the shelf that combine this material and present it in engaging formats. We've termed this concept ensemble, and it's something we found to be a very powerful idea to actually sell the idea of creating content and getting it out to a wider audience. You could have multiple different people providing this content, such as the seeds listed above. It can be also wrapped together in this metadata sort of media engine and quickly sort of queried and sort of data pulled out to people who want it in particular different ways, be it a small subset for a particular website widget, be it a sort of subject-specific content, multiple institutions feeding in but only stuff of a certain subject to appear in a subject center, internal material for a teaching and virtual learning environments, or if you want on a huge scale, all this material pulled together into, say, like a national portal or a regional portal and found in one location, therefore giving you a much easier place to find that content. Of course, when you actually bring this power together, there are efficiencies you can get in terms of what you can do. You can do much better sort of processing on sort of a centralized basis when you can add things like speech-to-text transcriptions. You could do OCR, slide video data, and actually get more tags and information on how to search through content. Different bits of analysis on how you can index this way, generating sort of extra stuff out of it. And, for example, there may be sort of efforts going into trying to translate this into other languages so that any content you produce could be actually made available to even sort of wider audiences. Of course, when you've got these in sort of portals and places that are easy to pull together, communities can start getting involved in this content. They'll start highlighting things that they think are particularly good, useful in different ways. They'll create sort of pathways and relating material together. And you can always tag and sort of add references to this content. This kind of sort of power can also come much, much easier when you've got compatible standards to work with. So, whilst all that's going on, there are only a number of different pilot projects we're having to work with to try and actually illustrate the concepts we're talking about. Now, bringing this back to some of the internal stuff here within Oxford, we're working, whilst dealing with capture is not actually technically part of the Steeple project, we're having to work with a wide different range of getting this material together. And it's arriving in all different formats by different technologies and by different means, and we have to try and find ways to actually bring this all together and make it work. So, let's bring this back to sort of the Oxford sort of perspective again. Let's talk about the OCS podcasting service. Now, if you were, this is almost sort of a Steeple implementation for Oxford itself, but because Steeple doesn't cover everything, there's a little bit more to the podcasting service. The service itself consists at the moment of about six primary elements. We offer training and support in all this technology and how to go about doing these different types of things. We offer a metadata subscription service called OxItems that allows anybody within the institution to enter information about their sort of materials that they want to broadcast and make available for automatic subscription. We are offering a processing service, so we should be able to absorb and take in any number of the different formats and different ways you created content and actually output it into a standardized, consistent way and actually make it easily sort of publishable. We've got media hosting facilities for departments and areas who have not got the ability to host this content themselves, because again, multimedia content tends to be quite large, and over time you only tend to accumulate, so it grows and grows and grows. And we also support two main institutional web portals for actually getting this content out to a large audience. We've got the podcast.ox web portal, which is constantly undergoing development to actually make that more and more interesting and compelling. And we've also got the incredibly popular iTunes U portal, the results of which you saw on the graph at the beginning of the presentation. That's where over 1 million pieces of content have been downloaded via that one portal alone. To bring this into the sort of more technical perspective, let's talk about the processing service. Well, as I said, the processing service is trying to work with taking content, this digital content in a variety of different ways. We've got technology platform that's largely focused on an Apple OS X service called Podcast Producer. It's a free service that comes with the Apple platform. It offers a podcast capture utility and command line thing to ingest and capture recordings via software basis. But we can also take files in via different means. Say, for example, an active Dropbox where you deposit your content, it's ingested into the system and it puts it out again. So people can either sort of connect via file system or via FTP. And we're also looking at web portal ways, people that can actually just go to a common website, be able to upload content and information about their material and have it pulled into the system. Once it's in the system can do a wide range of different things to this on a nice automated basis. So consequently, it removes an awful lot of the manual interaction involved in actually doing the podcasting. The common and easiest thing we deal with is transcoding, actually taking whatever format you've provided in and turning it into these multiple different formats we're supporting that can be used in a variety of different ways. We've got the ability to deal with automatic titling and automatic branding, the idea of being able to append or sort of prepend short introductory trailers or sort of short outro trailers, allowing people to sort of have that content consistently presented so that when it's taken wherever and played back whenever, people will actually know where the material came from. And we're also looking at ways of automating and aggregating the metadata together so that it all becomes one seamless process. Once actually all of that's been done, it has to then be published. So we're looking at ways to automatically push it onto our media hosting server, pushing it out to your own local website. So, for example, this processing service can work with your own local requirements. You don't have to necessarily create content for a wide audience. We can help you at different levels. And again, sort of for people who are doing content that they want within a restricted or a small audience, we might be able to publish straight into WebLearn and actually allow people to actually have a smooth process for getting content in there. And again, trying to get that metadata to all flow through and be consistently managed. So multimedia encoding is a very CPU-intensive activity. So consequently, we've needed to put together a system that can actually cope with large amounts of this material coming in and get it out there. We have, within the OS X systems, the X-Grid technology, which is leveraged by Podcast Producer. This allows us to take jobs in or content in and distribute it out over multiple CPUs, multiple processors, and very quickly and efficiently parallelize these tasks and encode this content back. We've got a very fast storage system now built into the back end, so we can actually support multimedia files that are very large again. They need high read rates and high write rates to be able to get through. So there's a sound system supporting this. And to give you an overview of this entire thing, there's a multimedia podcasting cluster we've put together that currently is being sort of developed and enhanced to go out there. It's actually consists of about 5 nodes. There's actually a production system and development system in there. There's all supported via a 4 gigabit fiber channel backbone with a 16 terabyte sound system underneath it. And again, it's all based upon very easy to use, very sort of efficient systems actually provided via the Apple services. I mentioned about the different ways we can try and deal with it. The example on screen at the moment is actually a screenshot from the podcast capture utility within Apple's OS X. It comes for free from anything from 10.5 upwards. We highlight, for example, we're trying to deal with different ways of capturing video content and actually making that presentable. It could be audio-only content. The software will allow you to do screen capture and audio capture at the same time, or you could just end up uploading a file. But this software and service is adapting and is evolving. And with the launch of Snow Leopard, for example, the software and the technologies will support the idea of doing dual video capture. So you could have a video camera pointed at your presenter at the same point as having a video of the screen content you're dealing with, or two different presenters. And the system's actually quite capable of merging these two video signals together, even doing picture-in-picture, alternating between sort of person speaking, the slides on screen, and a number of automatic transitions. In fact, what it will actually do is actually do chapterization based upon slide transitions if you specify a slide feed, for example. And this can now sort of take out an awful lot of the manual editing work required to try and make your content more usable. So, I've very quickly gone through any number of different things here. I said it would be a quick talk, so what I'll try and do now is address any of the questions you've got. Okay, if you want to know any more from the Oxford perspective, we run regular briefing sessions on podcasting, and they're taken on mostly by the ITLP team now. If you look on the OCS website under the courses section, you'll find multimedia podcasting at Oxford Frequently Asked Questions. It's a 90-minute session, which is part presentation, part question session, similar sort of format to this, I suppose. And that tends to run almost every other week during term times and a little less frequently during the holidays. We run courses on Audacity, for example, which is a multi-platform audio editing package. Allows you to actually quite easily get into recording and editing and publishing your own content. And for people who want a practical hands-on session, we run sort of a three-hour workshop referred to as Podcasting for Education, which again tends to run about once a term. If you've got any questions about this, please do email us and ask us about sort of what your particular requirements are. podcasts@ocs.ac.uk will come through to the podcasting team and we'll try and give you answers as best as we can. All the information we try and refer to and all the documentation generally tends to be linked together, but the first place we'll point you to is our podcasts.ac.uk website, which will have actually the majority of our content on and also links to other stuff. So, thank you very much for your time. If you have any steeple-related questions, there's an email address for me. Thank you.